And welcome everybody back to the Hangout in the Holy Land, the official podcast of LandGrantHolyLand.com, your premier free resource for all things Ohio State news and Ohio State athletics. I'm your host, Matt Brown. I'm the managing editor of the site. You can follow Land Grant on Twitter at LandGrant33. You can find us on Facebook. You can follow me, if you are so inclined, at MattSBN, and you can write to us, write to the show, if you have a thought that cannot be expressed within the confines of a single tweet. Yeah, you can shoot us an email at matt.brown@sbnation.com. We are recording this here on Wednesday, August 26th, earlier here in the morning at the beautiful confines of the SB Nation headquarters here in Washington, D.C., and that means that we are so preciously close to actual, honest-to-God college football happening, because I don't know about you, I am a little bit sick of writing off-season-type stories, and this has been an off-season that's been slow even among off-seasons. There hasn't been, like, real conference realignment. There hasn't been a real juicy kind of scandal until some of the Baylor things that happened just a couple of days ago, and like that's really depressing. It's important to write about, but it's not crab legs. It's not like the perfect off season kind of thing where it's like a major player doing something that's funny and mostly harmless and not like depressing and super serious. So we're really excited to have actual football happening. And we're also because we're running out of like Ohio State things to discuss. We've been breaking down a lot of the fall camp information, the stuff that's leaked out here. We've broken down a lot of the position battles. We've talked a lot about players to watch and everything. But one thing that we haven't talked a whole lot about, and something that is going to be important as we move into the season, and something that we're going to talk about a lot on Land Grant, are what we can glean from advanced stats. If you're a reader of SB Nation sites, and if you're not, I'm not sure how you found this podcast, and two, you definitely should be. You should rectify that, not just Ohio State's, but all of our sites are, of course, wonderful. But if you're a regular reader, you probably have seen things like F+ or S&P or heard about advanced stats. But I don't know about you guys. I'm a liberal arts major. I majored in political science because I'm terrible at math, and all I'm good at doing is arguing. So it was a little bit of a learning curve for me to understand what a lot of those things were. Like, I feel like I had decoded the box score. I had been a reporter for a while. I understood those numbers. I feel like I understood football, but then there's a whole bunch of other things that are happening. And I'm going to guess that I'm not the only person who may feel that way. So to help us understand what some of those numbers might mean, I'll try that again in English, and why they're important and what kind of things we can get from them, especially as it relates to Ohio State. Fortunately, I'm joined here by my friend and one of our writers, both for Land Grant and Football Study Hall, Chad, who can help us understand things a little bit more. Chad, thanks for coming.
Absolutely. Happy to be here, Matt.
And it's great here that Chad is actually joining me right here in our office instead of over yonder here over the phone and everything. So this is wonderful. And Chad, I'm wondering maybe if we could start. It seems like the biggest advanced stats that we see throughout our sites and throughout SB Nation, and we see these with Bill Connolly, seem to be about S&P Plus and F+. And those are some of the things that we see a lot when we're talking about how to rank teams with advanced stats. What the hell do those mean? What are those two numbers?
Yeah. So F+, whenever you see those F+ rankings, essentially, it's a combination of two other advanced stats. The first is FEI, which stands for Fermo Efficiency Index. I may be mispronouncing Brian's last name. Not totally sure. FEI essentially takes it's a drive-based efficiency stat. So it takes every single possession that happened in college football.
Okay.
And essentially, Brian broke down drives based on different kinds of drives, so methodical drives, explosive drives, essentially how efficient you are every time you get the ball, both on offense and defense. So that's half of F+.
My name is Jeff.
The other half of F+ is S&P+. So that's Bill Connolly's, also of SB Nation, mm-hmm. and Football Study Hall. So Bill's data originally started off as a play-by-play metric. So while Brian's is possession-based, Bill's is or was originally play-based. So he considers both efficiency and explosiveness by play, but he's since added in a drive-based component to his advanced metric, S&P Plus, as well. So essentially, when the two of them working at footballoutsiders.com got together, they combined their numbers and all of their data into F Plus, so taking the F from FEI and the Plus from S&P Plus. The other thing to keep in mind here is that pretty much the cornerstone of all advanced stats, especially since we have limited data to go on with, you know, a 12-game regular season, is that it's all opponent-adjusted. And so all of the metrics that we're using, whenever there's a plus associated with that abbreviation, that means it's an opponent-adjusted metric.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because for a casual fan, like, I think that's one of the hardest things about trying to decode more traditional college football stats. Is because, you know, when you're looking at the NFL and you're looking at total yardage or completion percentage, and there's good NFL teams and there's bad NFL teams, but all of the NFL teams have NFL players. And if you've
right.
watched NFL football enough, you know that there's not necessarily some gigantic, you know, talent gap between all of these. So there, and with college, when I'm watching Ohio State play Hawaii or somebody playing some directional FCS school or something, that talent gap is gigantic. And it can be hard for us to kind of determine, like, what do I take out of the fact that I watched this team score 48 points and pull up 578 yards, but it was against East Michigan Toledo State Tech. And so having an opponent-adjusted stat, it really kind of helps put a lot of those things in context, because that gap, even between Power 5 schools, can be enormous. There's a very big difference between being explosive and efficient on offense when you're playing against, say, Michigan, than there is when you're playing against Kansas, even
right.
though they're both teams. So that's interesting. Looking for the plus, then, that means that it takes those wildly divergent performances into account, right?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, the most common criticism of any kind of statistical analysis, especially if you're looking for message board commenters trying to drill ESPN or something,
sure.
is that, well, that team ain't playing nobody, and so these stats are meaningless.
Right.
Well, the whole opponent-adjusted thing is just designed to get around that problem. Since we're not starting with parity between the teams in college football, like you just said, it's kind of a necessary deal.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you, in your estimation, as somebody who's followed these things closely, do you feel that either of those metrics have strong predictive power? You know, compared to there's a ton of other computer metrics. We have the SAGRAN rate rankings. We have BCS use a bunch of computers, and we look to those sometimes as well. And you know, sometimes they spit out weird things. You know, they'll have North Dakota State ranked 26th or something.
Right.
Do you feel that these are better at predicting outcomes than, say, the Associated Press or the Coaches Poll or something else, or is it just, you know, one more data metric to keep in mind with everything else?
Yeah. So that's a really interesting thing to talk about, especially if you're going to dig really deep into the methodology here.
Yeah.
Because you can either design the metric to be based on retrofitting past data, so it has kind of a historical predictive power almost.
Mm-hmm.
So it fits data in terms of correlations with wins and losses. Or you can try to predict the future. It's really difficult to design a metric that's great at both. However, one of the things that's come out of the whole F plus, S&P plus deal is that there is a metric called projected F plus. So the whole idea there is to have some better predictive power as opposed to just having a retrofitting win-loss deal.
Sure.
So projected F plus actually has a really good track record for predicting the next season's general sense of how good teams are going to be. Obviously, the current projected F plus rankings are not how this next season is going to end. So we're not going to make any claims either at Football Study Hall or Football Outsiders about what, you know, that's how Ohio State is definitely going to end the season number one like they are in projected F+. However, I think the real great thing there is that it does give a great sense of win expectancy totals, so ceilings and floors for different teams, as
yeah.
well as giving a general sense of tiers of teams. And I think that's really the most valuable thing that you can do, is separate teams into tiers and to give a general sense of a team's floor and ceiling.
That's a great point. I mean, it can be easy as a fan to kind of to fall into that trap a little bit. We can't have great statistical modeling, and we can track all of these things. I think we've gotten more mature about doing that, but this, you know, we're looking at 12 game sample size. It's not baseball,
right,
where you play so many games and some of that noise gets mixed out. We can't predict injuries. We can't predict NCAA violations, and we can't predict just crazy emotional stuff that's going to happen in 20-year-olds. So there's and plus, you know, football, as I'm sure you're, I mean, as you listeners would agree, there's a non-trivial amount of randomness that's just introduced in the game anyway.
Yep.
Fumbles bounce weird ways. Officials do weird things. So, but that's a good point. One thing that I have found really useful from following this is it also, I think, can tell you a little bit more about a team's performance beyond just their wins and losses. If you have a team that's unlucky or that's playing really well but that has missed a couple of bounces here or there and may have a more pedestrian record, but it's actually like a really good team,
yeah,
you can kind of tease that out a little bit. I think Arkansas seems to be like a classic example. You know, that's a more middling win-loss record, but really dominated the run of play, as you know, if you will, during a lot of the game, where you could point. I think there was a Michigan State a couple of years ago when they finished 7-6, but were just like historically unlucky.
Right.
You know, missed all these turnovers. So you can look at that and go, they might be a sneaky good team next year if that regresses a little bit, and then they did. And when you know, Sparty wins 10 games. What does the projected F plus say about Ohio State or some of these other advanced stats coming into the season?
Yeah, so a couple of things there. First of all, Bill has a stat called adjusted turnover luck.
Okay.
So that's just important for listeners to keep in mind, too.
Sure.
So we do try and quantify some of this stuff that, you know, like you just said, Michigan State had a poor win-loss record but played much better than their win-loss record. So you would expect some kind of regression to the mean based on both their F-plus or projected F-plus and then the previous year's turnover luck. So that's one thing to keep in mind. In terms of Ohio State, Ohio State was actually pretty darn lucky last year.
Nice.
The ball seemed to bounce Ohio State's way a good amount. You know, obviously, if you look back to the national championship game, the ball did not bounce Ohio State's way, but Ohio State was just so much better than Oregon that they could overcome those turnovers.
Yeah.
I think it was 4 or 5 total turnovers.
That sounds about right. And you know, one of the interceptions really could have gone either way, like kind of a ball wrestled out. But other ones that just happens in football.
Right. Yeah. So I think that's part of it. Whether or not we're going to experience any regression downwards next year, you know, it's hard to say. It's kind of a random thing.
Yeah.
But
can I just say real quick, it does seem funny to think about Ohio State last year as being lucky in the face of losing two starting quarterbacks and Noah Spence and Dontre Wilson to injury. Like, you know, if you just look at these particular high-profile data points, it's pretty easy to spin a story of Ohio State being snake-bitten and overcoming adversity. And that's not to say that they didn't overcome adversity, because losing two really good quarterbacks during the season and having to play your third stringer is a big deal. But in terms of other ways we might measure luck, it's clear that Ohio State was not nearly as misfortunate.
Right. Yeah, so not only are you looking at fumbles, how they can bounce randomly into the hands of, you know, you can recover your own fumble or for the opponent, but it's also passes defended. Because we would expect, you know, roughly 50% or so of passes defended to be intercepted. So if there's significant deviation from that totally random amount of passes defended that would lead to interceptions, then we know that there's some luck there, too. So you're right. Ohio State was really unlucky in some ways. Losing Braxton a couple weeks before the season, that sucks. But in other ways, Ohio State got pretty lucky. And I don't know if we can necessarily guarantee that that's going to happen again.
Yeah.
The one thing that we can say is that luck certainly matters over the course of the season. You know, maybe Ohio State can overcome a single game where they beat Oregon, even with bad turnover luck.
Yeah.
But it's hard to go a whole season with bad luck.
Can you think of an example of outside, I guess, of Ohio State or Oregon? In recent memory that jumps out to you of a team that had was really, really lucky or really, really unlucky? Just off the top of my head, I was thinking maybe Houston's defense, I think, which had like a streak, like some crazy streak of getting a turnover and like multiple seasons here in a row, seems like, you know, you can there's scheme things you can do here with your secondary that might put them in a position to defense more passes, perhaps at the expense of giving up yardage and put yourself in that position. But, I mean, eventually luck has to enter into it a little bit, right?
That's definitely true. So one of the funniest things, and this is something that I'm thinking about all year for this upcoming year, mm-hmm. is that TCU was extraordinarily lucky last year.
Ah, there's a good example.
Okay, so almost 5.5. So their turnover luck per game was 6.34 last year. So their adjusted turnover margin was plus 1.5 turnovers per game. Their total turnover margin, plus 18. Unbelievable luck.
Oh, wow.
Unbelievable. So, A, what that tells you is you've got a really aggressive secondary. Sometimes that's great because you get a ton of turnovers. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's terrible because you can get burned on big plays. However,
I saw the Baylor game, too.
Exactly. There you go. Yeah, Exhibit A right there. But the thing there is I don't think that we can necessarily, just because TCU's defense, in terms of defense F plus and all the other advanced metrics, what was right up there in the elite category, I don't know if we can necessarily just go ahead and predict, holding everything else constant, that they're going to perform at that high level next year.
Yeah, that was a team, I think, in Bill Connolly's previews where, you know, wasn't saying that TCU is going to go like 7-5 or anything, but there was a little bit of skepticism there, not just because of the huge amount of attrition on the defensive side of the ball that TCU is going to have, but also that. It's easy, I think, just because there's so many teams, to kind of fall in the trap of, this team looked good in a bowl game, this team returns their quarterback, this team returns... three skill position players that I've heard of and remembers, and the defense can figure itself out, and then think that they're going to do very well. And sometimes that works, and certainly that often leads to really exciting offenses, especially if you play in a conference like the Big 12. But the devil is in the details, and there are times that it's a little bit more complicated than that.
Right.
So we talked a little bit here about some general efficiency trends with offense. We've talked a little bit here about turnover luck. What are some other specific advanced stats that might relate to Ohio State that we can kind of tease some insights out of?
Yeah. So the first thing that you've got to look at when you're looking at advanced stats is, and you don't need advanced stats to tell you that Ohio State was amazing on offense last year. You can just use your eyes.
Yeah.
However, there are a couple of interesting things there. Ohio State led the country in opponent-adjusted efficiency, explosiveness, and field position rankings on offense.
Seems like a lot. The field position seems relatively intuitive, and we saw that because Ohio State still has an amazing punter. Why don't you walk us through what those first two things mean?
Okay. So when we're talking about efficiency, essentially the whole goal of an offense, right, the ultimate end goal is to score points, preferably touchdowns.
Don't tell Iowa that.
Okay, yeah. I won't let Kirk France know anything about that. But when we're talking about efficiency, to get to that touchdown, you need first downs. So what we do is talk about efficiency in terms of how much each play goes towards getting a first down. So we can break down every down into a points value. So if you move the ball 4 to 5 yards on first down, mm-hmm. then it's considered an efficient play. An efficient drive ends in a touchdown. So when we're talking about efficiency, it's how steady can you be moving the ball. You can break that further down into run efficiency and pass efficiency. So not only are you kind of looking at bulk statistics here, you're not just looking at yards per play. That's separate from advanced stats. But we're looking at things like efficiency rate for running backs or adjusted line yards when we're talking about the offensive line.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk about that just for a second.
Please.
So Ohio State had one of the best offensive lines in the country last year, and I really think that the offensive line was the most critical factor in the team's overall success. So last year they topped the country in opportunity rate and were second in adjusted line yards. And I'm going to just talk about those really quick.
Please.
Adjusted line yards essentially is an opponent-adjusted figure. And essentially it tries to break down the percentage of a run that can be credited to the offensive line and that can be credited to the actual running back. Because you can have, a decent running back, but if he's behind an awesome offensive line, that he's going to do a lot better. Opportunity rate is simply the percentage of carries that gain at least 5 yards. And essentially what we're doing there is we're saying that the offensive line is responsible every single play for getting a 5 yard push. So you or me could be back there behind that Ohio State's offensive line and be expected to get 5 yards. So that's what we're saying. Essentially, Ohio State was the best in the country at getting that 5 yard push every time. So they were extremely efficient.
And they were able to get this rating, including the Virginia Tech game, where they were blown up, and Ezekiel Elliott, I think, picked up less than 50 yards rushing and really didn't get much of a push at all. So
right.
to have that outlier combined and with placing some really good defenses there at the end of the season is extremely impressive. And that offensive line just happens to return 4 starters for this year. So it would stand to reason that you would assume that should be, if not that excellent, at least close. We wouldn't expect a gigantic regression from that, right?
No, you're definitely not. I mean, the moving parts are all still there, and everything that you've heard about Chase Ferris seems to be that he's more than a solid replacement for Doug Baldwin.
Taylor Decker told me that in media days.
Yeah. So you've got to feel really good about the offensive line. I think then you're just got to look at the other variables that could be involved. So we're talking about defensive strategy. The offensive line certainly got better over the course of the season. There's no doubt about that. It got more cohesive, all that stuff that the media talks about. But the other thing is, Ohio State started shifting some of its protections, too, on run plays. It's not like when every team post-Virginia Tech started running a bear front cover zero, Ohio State responded with bear beaters. We're running off tackle. We're having wham blocks come in with Hyerman and Vanette tied in.
Yeah.
These counters, the strategic counters, are also what improve the offensive line play. I think that not only do we have a really talented group of linemen, but we also have a really talented offensive line coach.
Absolutely.
I think that the strategic responses there are just as important as the talent at offensive line.
Yeah, and it also helps that Ohio State has personnel who are not offensive linemen, who were especially lauded for being excellent blockers and for
Definitely.
Taking a lot of pride and that part of the offense. It's one thing to have great guards, great tackles, a great center, and people who are able to call up those coverages and recognize everything. But when you have tight ends, when you have running backs, when you have wide receivers or perimeter players who are also taking great pride in blowing people up and doing some of those things, when you have that combined, then that just adds up again to a very devastating power rushing attack. So the personnel, the statistics, and the scheme all seem to line up. And that would equal, 200 yard days for Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah, that's definitely right. I think that's an awesome point about the other blockers too, because Luke and I were just talking last night. Evan Spencer was one of the most talented blockers that Urban has ever had.
Oh yeah.
At any position, he just gave that 5 to 6 seconds of relentless effort every play. And so he's gone now, right? So we need someone else out wide. I think that, Noah Brown seems to be that guy. I mean, the dude is huge.
He's a big kid.
Yeah, he's a huge kid, especially for a wide receiver. And if he's being looked at H-back, you got to just imagine him on crack blocks. Like, that sounds devastating.
Yeah. Noah Brown's going to be fun to watch. It seems from, we're kind of parsing through tea leaves and everything since we're not actually at fall practice. But he's somebody who has been... there's been a lot of very positive things said about him. And if you look at a guy who's a little bit bigger and is maybe 85% of the blocker of Evan Spencer but has better hands,
right.
Or is perhaps a more active weapon in terms of actually being targeted for catches, that's a really dangerous player.
Yeah.
And to throw him in an H-back rotation that's already perhaps more loaded than the wide receiver group is,
right.
There's a lot of ways that you can deploy him in every facet of the offense that's going to be pretty dangerous.
Absolutely. Yeah, so, I think that all those kind of run together to the efficiency side of the equation, at least on offense.
Okay.
I think Ohio State, efficiency-wise, is set up for as good a year as last year. I think that the other half of the equation is explosiveness.
Okay. So that all seems like pretty great news. Is there anything from your reading of some of these statistics, either on offense or defense, that might give you pause? This, from looking at this, maybe this is the potential flaw for Ohio State for next year, or something that they might not be able to replicate from last year. Does anything jump off the page to you?
Yeah. So three things. There were three metrics last year that Ohio State relatively underperformed.
Okay.
First is we're looking at adjusted sack rate. So when we're talking about, it's not just overall sack rate, but we're also adjusting for how often the offense passes too.
Sure.
So Ohio State ranked 74th in that metric. The line was excellent in terms of run blocking. You know, we just talked about those efficiency metrics, but when it comes to sack rate, Ohio State was relatively poor. The thing about that, though, is that some of that is you can't separate the line's play from the play of the quarterback. Sometimes the quarterback gets himself sacked.
Sure.
That's super apparent with dual threat guys. There's always a correlation between having a dual threat quarterback and a poor adjusted sack rate.
It makes sense.
I think that the sack rate would be higher with Cardale at quarterback next year relative to JT. But, you know, the goal really isn't to have a low sack rate. It's to be efficient offense. I don't know if that's
It's not great to give up sacks, but if you're able to give up sacks and then on second and 18 pick up 9 yards on second and third down and still get the first down, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Right.
But that makes sense. Somebody, you know, if you're running, if a quarterback's trying to decide whether he's going to try to run, he misses a read or something, and also you had a year with inexperienced quarterbacks who maybe eluding sacks was not something that they were as skilled at, it makes sense that might be a little bit below average. Maybe that improves, but maybe not. You know, it does seem that efficiency would be a bigger deal necessarily. So what are the other things besides maybe taking more sacks than Ohio State would like?
Yeah, so the biggest thing for me right now is the defensive rush efficiency. So we've talked about how good as Ohio State was on offense for rushing efficiency. The defensive rush efficiency was pretty mediocre. It got a lot better over the course of the season, whether that's a schematic change or just personnel playing better. Part of it was the defensive rushing stats were so just locked in a really poor position from the Navy game. And then you have Indiana coming and Tevin Coleman rushing for 200-plus yards.
Yeah.
It destroys Ohio State's ranking in that stat. But I think it's really representative of the issue where while Ohio State was built to counter a lot of spread teams, if you have a really strong, efficient running back, they could find some holes in the Ohio State run defense. One of the things that I've thought about in the off season is if Lane Kiffin had stuck with Derrick Henry, you know, if he just kept calling Derrick Henry's number, he had a super efficient night, but just totally went away from him in the second half. I just gotta wonder if Ohio State would have actually lost that game, and Alabama could have retained control of the ball in the second half if they just stuck with the run.
You are not the only person to make that observation. I mean, Henry was rushing for over 7 yards a carry. And it's not like Ohio State had such an insurmountable lead that Alabama had to be chucking the ball every single time to make things up.
Yeah.
I thought about that, too. Even Yeldon was nearly 5 yards a carry. He was still approaching efficiency, not as explosive as Henry was in that game. It's funny. All of that's true. Ohio State also played what I think was a real murderous row of running backs last season. We talked about Indiana and Navy, obviously, but Cobb at Minnesota. That's a very power rushing focused attack. Cobb is an NFL player. Jeremy Langford at Michigan State.
Yep.
I think I'm just guessing off the top of my head. Probably rushed for about .150 in that game, and that's a very good Big Ten back. Michigan had some success running the ball efficiently, even though that wasn't a team that perhaps was was the most talented in that rushing system. But the Big Ten that year was really much more power run oriented, like they might be historically. And Ohio State caught a bunch of really good backs.
Right.
I don't know if that's necessarily the case this year. There are still some teams that were running. It's going to be an important part of their identity. Rutgers, Paul James is coming back. That should be a pretty good running back, but maybe not quite the same caliber of individuals back-wise on this year's schedule than there was for last year's. Maybe the line or the schemes may improve, but certainly, though, you'd have to hope that Ohio State's defensive personnel takes a step up compared to where they were on that side of the ball last year. But if you were going to hurt Ohio State, it seemed like that was kind of the plan to do it.
Yeah, that's an awesome point. So I guess two things that I've been thinking about there is I wonder if L.J. Scott or somebody at Michigan State can be a real threat on the ground. That's one thing I'll be watching.
Yeah.
Also, Virginia Tech's running backs, I think that they weren't healthy very much last year.
And they were all really young, too.
I feel like
every Virginia Tech skill position player was an underclassman.
Yeah, so I think that obviously those are our two most difficult games.
Yeah.
But I think the run games in particular are something I'm going to be watching. However, I am happy about reports about Adolphus Washington taking over Bennett's spot,
yeah,
and then Tommy Shutt coming in and taking on the other defensive tackle position. Those two dudes are really big. There's a lot of mass.
There's a lot of Adolphus Washington. Yeah,
yeah,
that's true.
And so what I'm encouraged about is if Shutt can successfully command double teams consistently, if he's just an effective space eater, then that means that Adolphus Washington, who has a lot of talent, a really good first step,
yeah,
and he's a big dude.
It was a five-star, I believe.
Five-star guy, yeah. If he can, I think if he's in more one-on-one positions, more natural one-on-one positions with offensive linemen, he could have an awesome breakout season.
That does seem to be a more natural place for him, where he's projected to be on this line, than maybe a little bit more inside where he was the year before.
Right.
And it's fortunate because I don't think Ohio State necessarily needs their tackles to put up superlative stat lines, because they've got three really good playmaking linebackers who are right behind them, and Darren Lee is going to come in there and try to mess things up in the backfield. McMillan will come in. They have defensive backs who can blitz. You just need someone to be able to occupy some of that space. If there's one position group where it may make sense to be a little bit nervous about that depth, it might be defensive tackle, because outside of Shutt, there's certainly a lot of people who are high profile recruits, but not a lot of documented, on the field success necessarily. There's not as much proven talent, and I think Larry Johnson has talked about how he would prefer to play a lot of people along the defensive line, both a tackle and an end, to keep everybody fresh and to be able to create mismatches. And that means that you need to have 7-8 people who can do that. I feel a little bit better about the end talent at Ohio State. A little bit less so about the tackles, but we'll see. That does feel like, even as I'm saying that, a very first world fan problem.
Absolutely.
I don't know about our fourth defensive tackle.
Right.
If that four star is going to be quite as good.
Right.
It's possible. That's one thing that jumps out to me as a potential concern spot.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. I think we've heard good things about Michael Hill. Sounds like he's had a little bit of injury issues in fall camp.
Yeah.
But other than that, you've got Donovan Munger, a lot of talent there, but unproven.
Yeah. We've a lot of great headline potential. I can hardly wait to type Munger games in all capitals and Photoshop him with a bow and arrow. We just need him to be on the field and hurting people.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the second string defensive tackles area for concern, I guess.
I guess if we have to be concerned about something, okay, we could be concerned about that.
Yeah.
What else? Other than perhaps defensive run efficiency, sack rates, is there anything else from the stats that would cause you any kind of concern?
So the only other thing is also a defensive issue.
Okay.
But I think it's closely related to the rushing efficiency, and that's our red zone efficiency, where we ranked 56th, so right in the middle of the pack.
Okay.
So when opponents were in scoring opportunities, so about 40 yards to go, not necessarily just red zone. But when they had scoring opportunities, they were generally fairly successful, or a lot more successful than they should be with an Ohio State defense. I think that that's really related to the run defense because opponents could be fairly successful, fairly efficient rushing the ball, even in the red zone.
Yeah. That's interesting. I had known that, and I don't think that would have immediately jumped off the page from just like my own recollection there of last year, but that does make sense. If you're able, especially with this personnel, where you think that there's Ohio State should have a pretty athletic and playmaking secondary, there's some experience there, that if you could force teams into second and eight, third and seven, into obvious passing downs, that ups the chances for Von Bell to pick off a pass or to, you know, to send somebody pin the ears back. But if it's third and four, third and three, and you can't be as aggressive, that adds up, and next thing you know, it's first and goal at the six.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll be interesting to see if that changes. I guess the flip side is perhaps Ohio State's defense is able to limit teams' ability to get in those situations to begin with, where it becomes a little bit less of a problem. But that is something to keep an eye on. Efficiency is the name of the game,
right.
And what happens before you get to the 40 matters a little bit less. But if teams are able to be efficient inside that area, that's where it hurts you on the scoreboard.
Yeah. So the other thing is we've talked a lot about efficiency. The funny thing is that so when Bill was redesigning his S&P Plus,
mm-hmm.
He did a series called Five Factors. And if you haven't read that series, you should really go over to Football Study Hall and take a look.
It's a big chunk of Bill's book, if I remember correctly.
Right. Yeah, it's a huge chunk.
Which you should read. Bill Connelly wrote a book. And it's written in a way that will help, even if you didn't pass Algebra 2, you can understand math well enough to understand college football a little bit better.
Yeah. So essentially when he was looking at the five factor season, five statistics, five areas of the game that are most correlated with success. So he did a lot of data testing here. And the surprising thing is that the thing that was most correlated with winning percentage was explosiveness. So when a team wins the explosiveness ratio, so number of plays in general. Most people use explosiveness 20-plus yard plays.
Sure.
When a team wins that ratio, 76% of the time, that's enough to say that they're going to win the game.
I feel pretty confident, given Ohio State's personnel and their play calling and their offensive line, that they're probably going to be more explosive than almost everybody that they play on their schedule this year.
Yeah, I mean,
that would make sense.
Yeah, you would think that.
Yeah, something would have gone terribly wrong if that wasn't the case.
Yeah, and you know, to be honest, I think that may be the key to the Virginia Tech game. If you look at Virginia Tech's defense last year, outstanding. I mean, just in all areas, they were
A plus elite. Plus secondary.
Yeah, absolutely. But the one metric that we have that ranked them even less than great is in the defensive rushing points per play plus. So essentially, that metric tries to get at defensive rushing explosiveness. They were 41st in that statistic. So what that means is that they were, after you adjust for opponents, they were slightly worse than in all the other areas at defending breakout runs. So what we need to do is kind of hope for Ezekiel Elliott 85-plus yard runs. That's easier said than done, but I think that is opened up because of the other offensive threats on the field, for one, and if there's going to be any semblance of a vertical passing game, which we did not have at all by the second game of the season last year, if there's anything resembling a vertical passing game and a horizontal passing game as well, then I think there's ample opportunity for Virginia Tech to have to back off of their cover zero, add in some bear beater line play,
yeah.
And then I think that's a recipe for some big runs from Elliott.
Yeah, I'm not sure to what extent Ezekiel Elliott's end of last season is like a new standard for what happened. I mean, like for those last three games, he's rushing something stupid like 9 yards a carry, and this was against Wisconsin and Alabama and Oregon. Oregon's defense maybe not as shut down as the other two, but really good teams. But I do think it's fair that we can expect a superior performance to last year. Elliott, 8 carries, 32 yards, and like half of those were on one carry, just completely shut down. And that's what forced Barrett in his second game ever to just have to chuck the ball to Devin Smith and hope that it worked. I would think even if it's just like what would be considered average for him, that's probably, you know, 5.5 and 120, and we opens up the rest of the offense here a little bit. I do think that's going to be a tough game, but it would really shock me if Ohio State's offense is locked up as much as it was last year, given that the personnel are so much more experienced, and given what they were able to do later in the year against teams that are, in my opinion, comparable to Virginia Tech.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I mean, even with as much as we've talked about how good Virginia Tech has been on defense, I would be pretty shocked if there's a repeat performance of their defensive effort. You know, there may be issues on offense that we can't necessarily predict right now for Ohio State. Like, you know, let's just say that there's something crazy like team chemistry issues.
Sure.
Or lack of focus or underestimating the opponent. These kind of hard to quantify deals, you know, maybe that could disrupt Ohio State, but I would just be really shocked if Virginia Tech is as efficient as they were last year.
Yeah, and that's a high bar. That's no disrespect to Virginia Tech. They were really, really good doing that. I think that's just about going to wrap things up here. Did you have anything else here as far as Ohio State or as far as advanced stats generally that you want to make sure that our listeners pick up as we head into the season?
I think that I think some of the most interesting things are going to be not just the quarterback battle, and we really haven't really touched on that today.
That's true. We've probably written enough articles about it here.
That's true.
But there's still more. I mean, that is what everyone wants to talk about.
Yeah. So I just wanted to mention that for a second. It's hard to have advanced stats on quarterback play to make a decision like that. Without having either access to the scrimmage data, so scrimmage stats, which we don't have, or charting data from last year to compare the two quarterbacks. First of all, we have a limited number of data points for Cardale, and I would really want all of that information to be charted. And the reason is you can look at Cardale's deep passing game and say, oh my gosh, you know, the kid is what we need for a vertical passing game. Then you go up and you see, if you play back that Wisconsin game, you play back the Alabama game, how much Devin Smith did for a lot of what really can be considered jump balls.
Yep.
But on the flip side, you look at JT, and you really get a sense for how much of the offense was focused on the quarterback run game when JT was out there. In maybe not necessarily in a good way. I don't know if advanced stats in the absence of that charting data and scrimmage stats can help all that much with the quarterback controversy right now. But, you know, that's something I think we're thinking about and can't wait to get a sense for with the Virginia Tech game in a couple weeks.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if we get a little bit more information about that quarterback battle. Before we actually get to the Virginia Tech game, I know that's when they're going to actually like officially announce the starter, but I suspect some things are going to leak that will help give it a little bit more clear picture. Stats aside, you know, as we're wrapping up here, just for kicks and giggles, who would you pick?
You know, I may regret this, but I think I'm Team JT right now, Team Barrett.
I am too.
You know, I just have to look at his passing throughout the second half of the season, and just I'm really impressed. You can look at the quality of the defenses that he played, and say, you know, of course he could throw for 300 yards against those opponents. But the thing is, if you go back to the previous year and you look at a guy like Braxton, Braxton played against similar competition and had far less efficient and explosive passing games. Obviously, we're not comparing Braxton versus JT here, but I think the people are undervaluing JT as a passer. And I just think that he adds another dimension to the offense and is a pretty accomplished, deep passing threat himself. If you just look at what he did against Michigan State, then, you know, I think that's as good as any performance that Cardale had, even in the national championship and playoff.
You know, it's funny you mention that. I just rewatched that game since they were all on ESPNU, and I'm not normally somebody who rewatches football games. I'm like, well, this was a lot of fun, and you know, sure, we'll watch this here for a little bit. And I would agree. I mean, that was a really good Michigan State defense, and Ohio State really shot themselves in the foot for like the first quarter and a half. They fumbled two punts. There were some ill-timed penalties and miscommunication. And from there, that was an unstoppable killing machine. And it,
right.
and it wasn't just because of Ezekiel Elliott. It wasn't just because of Barrett Reed options and missed tackles or anything. There was a vertical passing game there as well. And his decision-making was excellent. And that's something that I think I haven't seen a ton of in the Ohio State passing game since, like, Troy Smith. Was mm-hmm. it's not just the you know physically being able to make the throws or physically be able to get into space. It's making that right read nearly every time. It's hitting the open person every time, and it's being efficient, which you talked about here so much. I personally think that favors JT's game a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I like Cardale Jones. I won't be disappointed if he's the starter because I think he can do a really good job. But given Barrett's mastery, I think of ball deception skills within that read option to mask the fact that he's not Braxton Miller athletically. I just think defending Ohio State is harder when he's in charge. But we'll see. You really can't go wrong either way.
Definitely.
Well, I think that's just about going to do it here. Real quick, if you are interested in some more of the math here behind not just Ohio State but college football in general and wanting to be a smarter fan who is not duped into getting into Twitter arguments using things like total yardage because that's stupid as hell and you should be ashamed of yourself. You should check out Football Outsiders. You should check out Football Study Hall on SB Nation, which has articles from Chad and others about Ohio State and big games in general. And you should also follow Chad. Chad, what's your handle on Twitter?
My Twitter handle is CG Peltier. So PELTIER.
Excellent. And you can also go to the masthead on landgrantholyland.com, a fine website for all things Ohio State football. He's on there. He writes things and will continue to write things during the season about advanced statistics and what we can learn from games that have already happened and what they tell us about upcoming opponents. There's been a bunch of those this offseason. I think they're great reads. I've learned a lot. So be sure to click on them and read them. So I think that'll about do it for us here. We will be probably doing a call-in show before the first game against Virginia Tech and kind of get back into that rhythm here. You'll have some more podcasts here from us. This has been the Hangout in the Holy Land. We are at LandGrant33, Matt SBN, the Facebook. Be sure to like us. We post a ton of stuff there on Facebook. And Matt.Brown@SBNation.com for email if you have questions, comments, concerns, ideas, or just want to yell. It's okay. I'll listen because I care. Thanks, everybody. We look forward to talking some actual football with you soon. And in the meantime, thanks for listening, and go Bucks.